Good morning, everybody. This is the last session here at Hashem for this series or semester, whatever it is, and this series of discussions which we've been having in anticipation of Shavuos and Matan Torah. And we've been speaking about these uniquely human qualities, the qualities which HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted specifically to Adam, the climactic creation, the ultimate being for whom everything was created, the last of Hashem's brios, who makes it, so to speak, or breaks it. And we spoke about what we've structured this from the beginning is because there is this Adam created with Tzelem Elokim in the divine image with these special qualities that only actualizes those qualities when it comes to time of Matan Torah. And that's what gives the world its kiyum, gives the world its continued existence. That's why the world was, as the Gemara says, it's shaking, anxious, in anticipation. Would the Jewish people accept the Torah or not? Eretz Yara Vishakata. Because it needed to see that we would accept to be all that we could be, all that man would be able to be. And we've been trying to isolate in this ma'avar, in this process, which started on Pesach, when we started counting the Omer from the offering of barely processed barley, which is considered machal behema, when we were simple like the animals, to Shavuos, when we will offer the shtei alechem, the two special loaves of bread, special for a human being. What does it mean? What is the difference? Where do we find differences between Adam and Behema? And we've chosen five aspects. The first time we spoke about the idea of, instead of it being immediate, but b'zeh sapecha toch alechem is what distinguished man from beast, as Adam was pleased to hear that he'd have to work hard and toil and go through a process to be able to eat bread. While the animals could go out there and just munch the grasses of the fields, man would have to work. And while we take that more often than not as a curse, but Adam HaRishon understood that this idea of building and developing towards something is a uniquely human characteristic which distinguishes man from beast. Mm-hmm. And that, hence, the Sfiras Omer, counting 49 days till a 50th day when we can accept the Torah, as opposed to the haste of Yetzias Mitzrayim, where 1 second we're in and 1 second we're out. That was one quality that was immediately presented to Adam HaRishon as being different. We spoke about the capacity of Bechira, of free choice, that a human being has the ability to rise above, to transcend just simple patterns. He makes himself, by virtue of the fact that he's a complex being with a guf and a neshama, a body and a soul, you don't know which way he's going to go. But a human being is therefore going to define his path specially. That's a quality of a unique quality of man. We spoke about the ability to attach, the dveikus. As opposed in Parshas Bechukosai, if you recall, we spoke as opposed to im telchu im ikeri, that Hashem wanted to see lasting relationship, something which is a unique quality of man. The behemah, the animals, Hashem created a male, He created a female. They get together, they come apart. There's no inherent connection, but man attaches to his mate as himself. They create a permanent attachment, a permanent relationship, which is something which we have to aspire to as well in the realm of Kabbalah Satorah. And last week we spoke about the power of speech, the creative and communicative power of speech unique to Adam, to man. So today, in the last section, I want to speak to you about perhaps what is the underlying cause of all of this. It's a remarkable thing. I was at a meeting this week, a secular Jewish meeting, and someone made the following observation, which, you know, I'm very rarely tempted to rebut in the middle of somebody else's speech. This was a moment when I was tempted, but I overcame my temptation. But nevertheless, the person said that they read, the first part was funny, the second part was sad. The first part was funny. They said that they read recently in a study that a human being's DNA has 40% of the same quality as the DNA of a head of lettuce. Okay? So, you know, when you meet somebody who reminds you of a head of lettuce, you'll understand why. But, a human being shares 99.4%, I did not check this out myself, so 99.4% of the DNA with a chimpanzee. And so the person said, it is that 0.6% of the DNA difference that makes man able to do all the magnificent things that man is able to do. And that is patently false. Excuse me, I don't really like to be so arrogant usually, but that's patently false, lefi emunasenu, and the way we know. It's not that 0.6%. That 0.6% maybe makes it, I don't know, that we stand up straighter, that our eyes look different. I don't know what the differences are as a result of those 0.6%, but has nothing to do with the human capacity that we're talking about. The human capacity we're talking about is not visible in a DNA strand. It's the neshama that, as the Gemara says, as we've discussed, is roeh ve'eino nira. It sees, but it is invisible. You will not see it under any microscope or observe it in any material way. And that's the complete difference, the radical difference, the difference which is not a difference of degrees. We're smarter than the chimpanzees, or we're a little bit more agile, I'm not sure about that, but whatever it is, you know, able to work better with this, that, or the other thing. No. It's the neshama, which is not visible to any DNA strand, not visible under any microscope, that makes for an absolute and complete difference. The Tzelem Elokim that Hashem spoke about when he said, I'm going to create man in the divine image, the way, the conventional way to read that pasuk is, Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chaim. What it says, describes later as Hashem blowing into man, infusing man with a neshama, with a divine soul. And that's really what distinguishes us. So when we speak about our ability or our need to work in the physical world, we speak about that. Because the physical world is created physical. It starts off that way. And in order to be able to develop, it takes time to introduce the spirit, to introduce the higher qualities into the world, which starts off physical. When we speak about the power of free choice, that's generated by an neshama. When we speak about the power of attachment of dveikus, it's generated by an neshama. And certainly all the creative power of speech is equally generated by the neshama hamedaberes, by the speaking soul. So let's talk about the neshama. Let's talk about the neshama as something distinct in a certain sense from the guf, from the body. And let's talk about the neshama as something related to the guf, as something related to the body. And that's something we can study very, very much in the context of one of the major teachings, of all the major teachings in this week's Parsha. One of those teachings is the Parsha of the Nazir. The Parsha of the Nazir, who very, very much stands at the crossroads, at the juncture between the physical and the spiritual world. Let's read just a little bit of that Parsha as it begins. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor, daber el bnei Yisrael v'yamartu aleihem. Speak to the Jewish people and say to them, Isho, Isho, Kiyafli, Lindor Neder, Nazir Lohazir LaHashem. A man or a woman, Kiyafli, that will simply express and to make a pledge of Nazirus, to separate themselves, to crown themselves for Hashem. Miyain v'Sheichor Yazir, from wine and intoxicants he should separate. Chometz, Sheichor Lo Yish, Chometz Yain v'Chometz Sheichor Lo Yishte. Even the vinegar which comes from wine or from aged wine he should not drink. V'chol Mishras Anavim Lo Yishte. Nothing which is soaked in wine should he drink. V'anavim Lachim V'Yveshim Lo Yechal. He shouldn't eat grapes, whether they are moist or dry, grapes or raisins. Kol Yemein Nizrei Kodesh U L'Hashem. All the days of his Nazirus he is to be holy. Kodesh U'Hashem. And then, right, sounds good, right? Sounds like this man is something special. The Cho Vazoistar Nazir B'yayim Elois Yimei Nizrei. And this is the story, this is the law of the Nazir on the day that he completes his Nazirus. When he finishes this process, Yovi Oso El Pesach Oel Moed. He shall bring him to the door of the Oel Moed. Which we're going to note this verse later. Very interesting turn of a phrase. He shall bring him, he shall bring himself to the door of the Oel Moed. V'hikriv Es Korbono L'Hashem. And he offers his offerings to Hashem. Keves ben shnaso tamim echad liola, a year-old lamb, perfect to an ola, as an ola. V'kivsa achas b'shnaso tmimo l'chatos, and a female lamb, also in its first year, perfect for a chatos, for a sin offering. V'ayilecha tamim l'shlomim, and a perfect ram for a shlamim, a peace offering. So what do we have here? In the middle, a chatos, a sin offering. Why? For this nazir, who is accepting upon himself this very, very special status, this ascetic status, where he's separating himself from wine, from pleasures of this world. Why, when it's all over, does he bring for himself a korban chatos? So I want to, although it's a little bit perhaps out of order to do it this way, but I'm going to do it this way. I want to read with you first the words of one of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Bachya. It really, I should have quoted for you the Ramban, but Rabbeinu Bachya just articulates it a little bit more clearly. B'yom Alos Yemei Nizro, on the day that he completes his Nazirus. Tam HaKorban Azeh B'Nozir B'yom Alos Yemei Nizro Lo Nisgala. The reason for this Korban, on the day that he completes his Nazirus, is not revealed. Kilomatsino b'chol ha-Torah kula korban kim alavon shekodam l'sha'avar. Rabbeinu Bachya, as you see, is clearly troubled by the chatos, by the sin offering. He says, I don't understand. A sin offering is brought, conventionally, for an aveira, a wrong that the person has previously committed. V'zeh shekodam v'zocha l'asais mitzvah? The nazir here is completing a process where he's doing a mitzvah. During the days of his Nazirus, he was holy. He was separated from material desires. And now on the day that he completes his Nazirus, the Torah says he should bring a korban. This is amazing, surprising, revolutionary. It's an expression of the Gemara. It's a chiddush, it's a novelty that we're taught here regarding Nazir. Why should he bring a sin offering for having done what appears, for all intents and purposes, to be a very lofty, voluntary mitzvah? And Rabbeinu Bachya proceeds to quote the Ramban, who he says explains this in a simple way. And he says, Ki'ish hazeh chotei nafsho bimlos ha-Nazirus. Ramban says, you know what the sin is? The sin is ending the Nazirus, completing the Nazirus. Kiwata Nazir Mikdushose Vavedas Hashem Isbarach. He is now crowned from of his Kedusha and his service of Hashem. Viroy Hayalosha Yazir La Olam, Viyamad Koyama Vikdushase Nazir, the Kaddish Dalekha. And he's tasted this transcendent kind of existence. How could he ever give it up? How could he turn away from it? In the Nevi'im we find an equation which is made between the Nazir and the Navi and the Prophet. So there's something special that he has achieved during this time. And it says, Kol Yemein Israel, Kodoshu Lelokov, all the days of the Nazirus, he is holy for Hashem. V'alkenu tzarech kapara b'shuva li'tamo b'tavas olam. So he needs a kapora when he just goes back and takes another drink of wine. When he's going back to regular pedestrian life, that's why he needs to bring a chatas. However, says Rabbeinu Bachya, I'm not satisfied even with this. It's still a great chiddush. Because that means that the korban is for what he's about to do, not for what he has done. We don't have a precedent for that. You don't usually bring korbanos in advance. You know, here, I'm planning to sin today, so let me take care of this first. You know, it's the opposite. The Gemara teaches us, the Mishnah teaches us, a person who says, Echta va'ashuv, I'm going to sin and then I'm going to do tshuva, so ain't my speaking beyond the last of tshuva. We say, forget about it. We're not giving you a chance to do tshuva. Tshuva is not something that you go ahead and do negative things anticipating being able to do. And so here we're going to tell the Nazir, oh, bring a korban, atone for yourself, because you know you're going to be sinning. Better he shouldn't sin. Why are we building this in to the system? So Rabbeinu Bachya is not satisfied tremendously with the interpretation of the Ramban. So let's look at the Gemara, where the Gemara presents to us another piece to this. And the Gemara, in fact, tells us a story of the ultimate Nazir. The Tanya Omar Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik said, source 3 on your sheet, it's from a Gemara in Nedarim, Daf Tes, it's also a Gemara in Maseches Nazir. Miyamai lo yachalti osham nazir tamei elo echad. Shimon HaTzadik, you know, is a Kohen Gadol. And Kohanim are given karbonos, the offerings, the chatas offerings, which are brought in the mizbeach, on the mizbeach. So part of it goes on the altar. The meat is not eaten by the owners. It's eaten by the Kohanim. It's Kodesh Kodashim. It's the holiest meat. It's eaten by the Kohanim. Says Shimon HaTzadik, I never ate from the chatas of a Nazir Tamei. Why? Because I didn't like this whole Nazirus thing. This was the one Nazir I'm going to tell you about now, says Shimon HaTzadik, that I felt he was real, he was genuine. I liked what he was doing. I didn't think he was going to change his mind when the going got tough, and therefore I ate from his korba. Pamachas bo adam echad Nazir min adorim. A Nazir came once to the Beis Hamikdash from the south. Ureisiv shu yefe enayim v'tov roi ukvutzosov seduras lo taltalim. He was an exceptionally beautiful person, including that he had beautiful, beautiful, flowing hair. Amarti lo, I said to him, Bini, maroisa lahashchis asar chazeh anah. Why are you coming here? Why did you pledge Nazirus when at the end of Nazirus you have to take a razor to the head and you have to cut off all of that beautiful hair? Why did you do this? Amar li, and he said to me, Roe hoisi la'abba bi'iri. I was a shepherd for my father in our town. Halachti lamalos mayim min hama'ayin, and I went once to fill water the sheep from the spring. V'nistakalti bibevuashali, and I saw my reflection. Okay, in those days they didn't have mirrors over every sink. There's a reason for that. Maybe they did, but they didn't have any sinks, right? So he went to the spring, and he looked into the spring, and he saw his reflection. And he says, "Upochas ala yitzri ubikesh l'tardeni min ha'ilam." And my yetzer, my drives overcame me, and they were ready to drive me out of this world. Omar tilo, he was so taken with himself. Omar tilo, I said to him, to himself, Russia, evil one, lama ata misgo ba'ilam sheina shalcha. Why are you taking pride in a world that isn't yours? You know, eventually, this body of yours that you're taking such pride in, it's going to disappear into the ground, separate from you. What my task is, that I should take this hair that got me all caught up in it, and I'm going to cut it off for the sake of heaven. Says Shimon HaTzadik, Miyad amadati unashakti val reishai. I stood up and I kissed him on his head. Amarti lo, I said to him, Bini kamoicha yirbu nezri nezirus b'Yisrael. There should be many amongst the Jewish people who should pledge nezirus with the kinds of motivations that you bring. Alecha akosuv ayman. It's for people like you that the pasuk said, Ishki yachli lindar neder nazir lazir l'Hashem. You're the perfect nazir. You did it exactly right. And you did it for exactly the right reasons. Now, Shimon HaTzadik was not usually happy with the Nazirim. Why was he unhappy with the Nazirim? Well, maybe he was unhappy, Shimon HaTzadik himself. And there are indications of this, because he said what happens is they become a Nazir, they get all excited, and then they resolve withers. It gets a little tough, especially if they become Tameh. You know, if a Nazir becomes Tameh by mistake, he's got to start all over again. And it gets a lot harder than he ever imagined. So he says the person that ends up regretting it, the whole thing is like nishtahin and nishtaher. It's not quite. So maybe that's his objection. But the Gemara continues on the very next page. And the Gemara brings what is, I think, a more well-known objection to Nazirus, which I'm sure that many, if not all of you, are on some level familiar with. And what is that? We could read quickly the introductory lines. I want to buy a Shimon HaTzadik, Rav Shimon, Rav Elazar, Rav Kapra, Kulan Shuta Achasein, Denazir Chaytehavi. There are three Tanoim that we have on the record that said that a Nazir was a sinner. Shimon HaTzadik, we said he didn't want to partake of them. Rav Shimon, we also discussed in the Gemara. Rav Elazar, Rav Kapra, Berebi is what I want to focus with you. Detanya, Rav Elazar, Rav Kapra, Berebi, Aymer. The Chiper Olav Me'asher Chato Al HaNefesh. And he will atone from that which he sinned against his soul. How did he sin, the Nazir? What sin was there? He deprived himself of wine. He deprived himself of a pleasure of this world. Now, wine is considered to be not a necessity, but a luxury. Valodvorim kal v'chomer. So he says, so let's consider. Umaze shalotzir atzmo elo min hayayin nikrachote. If this person who withheld himself from wine, from a luxury, is called a sinner, hamitzar atzmo mikol davar alachas kama v'kama, a person who withholds from himself all the pleasures of the world, how much more so? Mikan kolayoshev v'tanis nikrachote. From here we see that a person who regularly fasts, who's depriving themselves not only of wine, but of bread and of water and of everything else, that's called a chayte. That's called a sinner. This is a whole different attitude. And this attitude is that in an ideal world, a person is able to have pleasure from this world. Hashem created us, He created this world because Hashem is hatov v'hametiv. He is good and He shares of His goodness. And Hashem shared of us His goodness, yes, in the ultimate form. The ultimate goodness is that we should experience ourselves godliness. We should be also kind like Hashem. We should also be truthful like Hashem. We should have a character where we know that when we ourselves are good, that's the greatest satisfaction that we have. But as we all well know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also created chocolate ice cream. And that's also a pleasure. I mean, for most people feel that way. Right? It's also a pleasure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made in the world. And we're supposed to enjoy that too, because Hashem is a tithe. He didn't create it for us to torture ourselves with it. He would like for us to enjoy it. He created for us all kinds of things in this world to be able to indeed have some pleasure from. And so says Rav Elazar HaKapar, the Nazir, who chose to deprive himself of even a luxury of this world, is considered to some degree a sinner for stepping away from the pleasures that the world has to offer. Okay. It's a very, very significant idea. At the same time, we do know this positive value of the Nazir. The Nazir is in the unique position of being called both a chote, a sinner, and a kadosh, and a holy, sanctified person. Shimon HaTzadik, who generally would consider the Nazir a chote, seems to subscribe to this. But then he said, but you're the right Nazir. You, this fellow who came in and was getting carried away, you're just the right Nazir. And we understand that there is this delicate, delicate balance. Because on the one hand, Hashem wants us to enjoy the pleasures of His world. He created them for a reason. On the other hand, sometimes, as you know, the pursuit of the pleasures of this world can really get us confused, can really get us off track, can really get us to completely lose our sense of direction and our sense of values. So you understand, without anything profound that you didn't know before you came in here, that when Shimon HaTzadik encounters this fellow, who looks magnificent, who he says, what a shame, he's so beautiful, you know, when you see a person like that, maybe you should make a bracha on that person, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made such beautiful, beautiful people. Why are you taking away from Hashem's world by cutting your hair off? Why are you depriving yourself by becoming a Nazir? And he said, yes, it's a beautiful world, but I was getting lost in the material parts of this world. And so I had to somehow hit the brakes. I had to swerve, to move out of the way, so that indeed I wouldn't be headed on this runaway involvement with this world that would cause me to lose direction. So it's important, on the one hand, to enjoy Hashem's world. On the other hand, it's very, very important not to get carried away with it. That it shouldn't be our driving force that causes us to go who knows where. Not necessarily in the most obviously tragic directions, but even more subtly tragic directions, where we spend so much of ourselves just pursuing the hair or the wine or all the other things in between, and not cultivating enough of what Hashem created us, especially the more refined pleasures that Hashem created us to be able to experience and to be able to enjoy. I want to learn with you a piece in the Ramban. A piece in the Ramban which is relevant in a certain sense to what we started with in this little series of five, when we talked, if you remember, at the very beginning in Parshas Emor, before we even spoke about the work ethic, we spoke about the fact that the Kohen is not supposed to come in contact with a corpse, come in contact with death. Because what the Kohen is about is this idea of bringing Hashem into the world. And when Hashem is into the world, when the neshama, when the soul is into the guf, is into the body doesn't die. It's only when it's separable. Death, the separation of the body from the soul, is the failure to some degree of the Kohen's, of the Kohen's mission. So not something the Kohen is to come in contact with. So here let's learn a Ramban about life before the sin, about how death would or would not have been. And in the middle of it, or towards the end of it, the Ramban tells us what I think is a remarkable little tiny note that's a tremendous chiddush. I think it's a tremendous chiddush to many who hear it for the first time. Adas Anshei HaTeva, says the Ramban, scientists, right, the ones with the 99.4% of the DNA, right, Adas Anshei HaTeva, Hayoha'odam Usad Lemisa Mitchilas HaYitzira Mipnei HaYosei Morkov. Man, from the beginning, was expected to die. The Ramban here is discussing the idea that it says in the Pasuk, don't eat from the tree of knowledge, because on the day that you eat from it, you will die. Now, Adam HaRishon, he ate from it, and he didn't die that day, right? So what do we take it to mean? We take it to mean, on the day that you eat from it, you will become mortal. You'll become subject to death. Says the Ramban, man was destined to death from the beginning. Because he's this composite being, right? Body and soul, and the body parts, forget body and soul, the body parts, they all have to work together perfectly. And anything which is created from a number of parts, ultimately, they feel falls apart. So Ramban goes on and says, so when it says that he would die, it's a punishment. He was going to die anyway. But he says, the day that you eat from it, you get a death penalty. Now, you know, from a death penalty to the actual carrying out of the sentence can sometimes be a while. So it says that about many averos in the Torah, that there will be, the person will die at the hands of heaven, and it doesn't necessarily happen right away. Okay, so that's basically what he writes about in the first few lines. And he says, the lokachlam are towards the end of the third line, and therefore it says, ba'onesh, in the punishment of Adam, at shuvcha el adama, you will work hard till the day that you return to the earth, ki mimena lukachta, that you were taken from, for you were taken from, ki ofer atav el ofer tashuv, you are from the dust, you can go back to the dust, betivacha, that's natural. V'gam itchila yoichom nipriyetu mizera haaretz, even before the sin, he ate from the fruits and from the trees, im kein oisabai hatocha v'sibas havaya v'hefsed. I mean, if he ate from the fruits and from the trees, so then that means that he got hungry and he needed to eat and he ate these things and sometimes they worked and some, in other words, man was normal. Man the way we know it. He was a human being who would live and who would maximize his life, who would peak, who would go down, who would die. That's the way it is. And that's the way it always was, according to the scientists. However, says Ramban, Aldas Rabbi Seinu, but Chazal's opinion, our sage's opinion is different. That il mole shechot alei meis la'ilam, had he not sinned, he never would have died. Because the soul which came from above would make man live forever. The same desire that God put into creating him would keep him going eternally. So now, the Ramban was an open-minded person, and he wanted to address the opinions of the scientists. He said, this idea that because the person is a composite being, he's going to have to come apart at some point in time, that's only according to those of small faith who believe that the creation just happened the way bechiyuv, the way it needed to, so to speak. It just developed. But those who say that the world didn't just evolve, but it was Hashem's wish to infuse such a creation, so then Hashem could also make it continue. There aren't limitations of science. And if that's the case, when the verse says, on the day you eat from it, you will die, Ostia ben mamas. Then you will become mortal. Then lo tiskayim la bechefti. I'm not going to let you stay alive forever. In other words, in brief, says the Ramban, that if a human being really didn't have a strong connection to the neshama, then the body would function according to its own rules. And when the body comes apart, the body comes apart, and there's the death of the body. But Hashem created man, put into him a neshama, and gave the potential that that neshama could be with him forever, could infuse the body with its presence, could conquer it, take it over, so that the person would live forever. That's what we speak about when we say, for the Kohen to see death, it's for the Kohen to see the failure of the potential which man was created with to be immortal, to have the neshama fill the guf and take it over and make it indeed eternal and live forever. Okay. So Ramban is left though with one little loose end he has to tie up, which is, so if man was immortal and he wouldn't die because the neshama, the soul, could keep him alive, so why did Hashem give him food? Says the Ramban, the food originally was for pleasure. When Hashem gave Adam HaRishon food to eat, it was for pleasure, for his pleasure. And he goes on and he says, and maybe this food wasn't as imperfect as the food which we have, which also implies hefsed, that we have to, you know, send so much of it out of our body as waste. But the food was la'ayne. He didn't need it to stay alive. His soul kept him alive. He lived on soul food. That was there for pleasure. So this is a remarkable Ramban. You know, when we view this picture of an immortal Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden, I think of this spiritual being, where we say, what, he's going to sit down, he's going to eat something for pleasure? He's going to have a fruit for pleasure? He has greater pleasures. He can walk through Gan Eden and encounter Hashem and have all of these things. But evidently, Hashem created man in the material world and wanted him to have every layer of pleasure. Every layer of pleasure. The spiritual pleasures and the material pleasures of the world which he had around him. Let him have oneg. Let him enjoy. What then went wrong? What changed when Adam HaRishon ate from the tree of knowledge? What changed at that point in time was that pleasure became a drive, a motivator. Adam HaRishon would engage and enjoy the pleasures of this world, but they would never distract him. He knew exactly what life was about. He knew what he was supposed to do. He was, in the words of the Ramban, borrowed from the Kiddush Levana, Poel Emes, Shepu'ulaso Emes. He was a doer of that which is true, that everything which he did was true to the mark. Adam HaRishon knew what had to be done, and he wouldn't do anything, engage in anything that would distract him from that. But he could engage in certain things that wouldn't distract him from it one bit. He could enjoy it, and it wouldn't cause him to deviate. If there would be something which would be forbidden, he wouldn't do it. If it would be something that if he would eat it, he wouldn't be feeling so well, or it would do something to him health-wise that would make it less effective in serving of Hashem, he wouldn't engage in it, because he knew what the prize was. But if there was a pleasure that he could have, that in no way distracted or detracted from what he had to really do, he was there to be able to take it. Hashem wanted him to have oneg, to have pleasure on every level. Hashem created him in a physical world, and he didn't create him to imagine that it didn't exist. Just like there's an aspect of the Nazir that's a chote. Wow, he's triumphing over his physical drives, but at the same time, you know, he's acting as if this physical world that Hashem created, as if it doesn't exist. And Hashem created it because he wanted it to exist. But he wanted it to exist proportionally. That it wouldn't be that which drives us, but it would be that which we would be able to enjoy without it driving us to distraction. This is the ideal. This is the perfect mix which the person would have, where a person is able to enjoy things in this world, but not be carried by that enjoyment to make mistakes, to be distracted, to lose focus from the higher values that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us to be able to achieve. Plain and simple. And that's ultimately Kedusha. Kedusha is transcendence. It's to some degree the person being above this world, but not any more Kadosh than Adam HaRishon, who Hashem created him these things for Onik. Above it, and yet a part of it at the same time. What does that mean? So I want to go back with you to the Rashi that I mentioned to you earlier, and the strange phraseology of the Pasuk, and give you a little bit of the explanation of what the Meshech Chachma says on this Rashi. It's a beautiful explanation. It said in the Pasuk, the Rashi is on the bottom of the first side of your sheet. It's going back on Pasuk Yud Gimel, on the top of your sheet. This is the Torah of the Nazir. On the day that he completes his Nazirus, he shall bring him to the door of the Ohel Moed. Which is a strange phraseology. He shall bring him, says Rashi, Yavi Aso Yavi Es Asmo, he should bring himself. In other words, he brings himself to the door of the Ohel Moed. Now, is that the way you speak? You know, when somebody's upset at their child, they say, get yourself over here, or something like that. You know, it's like, it's a very, very strange and cold kind of a phraseology. You say, come here, right? Or come, Yavo Elo El Moed. He should come to the El Moed. Yovio, so he should bring himself to the door of the El Moed. What kind of a choice of a term is that? Rashi says, we find it in two other places. Why is this used? Why is this used here? So the Meshech Chachma writes on this the following beautiful explanation. Do others bring him? He brings himself. That's a question which was asked by the Sifrei. Says the Meshech Chachma the following. How long is Nazirus? Does anybody know? Person says, I'll be a Nazir. How long is a person supposed to be a Nazir? A month. Standard Nazirus, Stam Nazirus, the prince says, I'll be a Nazir, they're a Nazir for a month. Okay, some people don't get a haircut for a month anyway, but whatever it is, right? So Stam Nazirus is for 1 month. A person can pledge Nazirus for a year, a person can pledge Nazirus for 5 years, a person can pledge Nazirus forever, Nazir Olam. A person can pledge Nazirus like Shimshon, which has its own things. But a regular assumed Nazirus is a month. Where does it say it? The truth is, it doesn't say it anywhere openly in the Pasuk. The Gemara learns it out from very, very unusual kinds of drushas. One drusha the Gemara makes is that it says, Kadosh Yiyah. He shall be holy. What's Yiyah? The numerical value of Yiyah is 30. Another way the Gemara learns it is because the word Nazir in one form or another is said in the Torah 29 times. Okay, or 30, whatever. The Gemara goes through a whole thing, 29, 30, with that. So, I mean, these are very hidden ways to teach you a very basic halacha. And the Meshech Chachma is bothered by this. And he offers a very practical, beautiful explanation of why. He says, because what's Nazirus for? Nazirus is for the person as the person of Shimon HaTzadik's story. A person who feels themselves to some degree that they are somehow overtaken. They're out of control. Right? Their Yetzer has them in their clutches, in its clutches, and they feel compelled to do things that they know that they shouldn't do. So tell me something. How long does it take to get over that? How long does it take for a person to develop self-control to not engage in that specific behavior that they can't, quote-unquote, control? It all depends, doesn't it? I mean, it depends how much you're into it. Till you can, your whole life, of course, you have to work to some degree all of your life. But to gain the equilibrium, instead of going to the extreme of Nazirus, to be able to be somehow in a more classic middle place, for some It might take a long time. For some, it might take a little bit of time. You know, when people have to deal with things, addictions and the like, you know, sometimes the person has to just go cold turkey forever. Otherwise, they're still going to be vulnerable. And sometimes it's a period of time until they find a way to be able to manage the specific thing that they're grappling with. Says the Meshech Chachma, so the Pasuk is going to say, this is how long you should be a Nazir? The Nazir is so subjective. It's not something that we want, that we're prescribing as a regular thing. It's a needs-based parsha. It's something which somebody does because they feel themselves slipping away from the world of self-control. So whatever it's going to take them to get it back. Okay, the Torah gives hints to, if a person just said it, halachically, how long do they minimally have to keep? 1 month. But it's not spelling it out. Because the whole nature of what's being done here is get to know yourself and to get a grip on yourself. A real grip on yourself. So says the Shmeshach Chachma, that's why the Pasuk doesn't give a specific time period. Because it depends on the person. Mm-hmm. Now how can you tell? How can you tell when you've made it? So I read to you a little bit from the middle of the paragraph of the Meshech Chachma on the top of the second side of your sheet. Spelled wrong, excuse me. It's from the database. Avchina ladas, that should be an ayin. And the test to know, emas nigmar shleimusa umaloso, when he has completed and he's now mastered the situation, shekochos yitzro lo yolichuhu sholol, vachemda lo yate lahaseichel, when will he know that the power of his drives will not take him into empty directions and desire won't cause his mind to be distorted? How can he tell? Says the Meshech Chachma, is k'shumistakil al inyone atzmo kemabit al mifolos acherim. When a person achieves the impossible. And that is when the person is able to look at his own issues with the objectivity as if he was looking at somebody else's. When he sits and he's deciding whether he should partake of something, whether he should do something, he's able to make that decision based on cost, benefit, with the same objectivity as if somebody else was asking him, tell me, do you think this is a wise idea? If you really like ice cream, and somebody comes to you and says, should I have that bowl of ice cream? You'll be very objective. It doesn't matter that you love ice cream. You'll be able to say to the person, well, I don't know, let's see, how are you doing with this, how are you doing with that, and so on and so forth. But when it comes to yourself, you know you can't make the decision using the same kind of thinking, the same kind of process. A person knows that he's there, that he's made it, when he's able to approach his personal decisions with the same objectivity that he approaches those of somebody else. Ulevavo eino chashud be'avas atzmo. His heart is not, you know, chashud, suspect in its self-love. Oz batuach, then can be secure. Ki yikach me'anos ha'olam b'mezeg haro'oi v'loyavo l'mosros. Then he can be secure that he will enjoy this world in the proper measure and he won't get overwhelmed and overindulged. V'adarava, yehena me'olam, v'yadatu mureves bein habrios. He'll enjoy the world and he'll be very, very much mixing well with other people. Hashem doesn't want us not to enjoy the world. The Nazir is a refuah. It's a corrective. It's a therapy to get us to be able to enjoy it properly, with the proper measure. Lochein diber. So concludes the Meshech Chachma. That's why when the Pasuk speaks, it says, he brings himself. Ki'ish acher. He's bringing his body in there as if it's almost as if it's somebody else. Uvahashkafa shuroa malasuloso. It says, malasuloso v'shachav u'moznei tzedek. Just like he's standing above somebody else and looking at his situation, kein yashkif al inyone atzmo. So the person will be able to look at their own things. Again, it's almost impossible, as we'll follow through a little bit more. But you understand that it's not impossible to get closer to there than we are. To be able to achieve some level of detachment and objectivity. And isn't it beautiful? The Mashal Chachma doesn't say this, but it's just so beautiful that what happened? Remember that story of Shimon HaTzadik, which he did bring. Those are a couple lines that I didn't read. I just didn't read it with you because we saw it already. But the story of that Nazir, remember? What happened? What was the language of the story? He looked into the mirror and he said, Russia, evil one, to his Yetzer, to his drives. Why are you taking pride in a world that isn't yours? He's talking to himself again, right? Remember like last week? He's talking to himself, right? He's talking to himself. Why is he talking to himself as if he's talking to another person? Because that was the light bulb moment when he looked into there and he started getting carried away and he said, oh my gosh, I'm getting carried away. He had that instant was the beginning of detachment where he understood that somehow this body of his had taken on a life of its own that wasn't him, it wasn't his personality, it wasn't what he really wanted. It was now a runaway train. And he spoke to it from a distance. And he started a process of Nazirus, where he would be able to act with it from a distance, Yavi Oso. To be able to gain a little bit of that detached objectivity. And I want to share with you, again, it's hard. This is hard. Hard, hard, hard. Maybe it's impossible. Maybe it's impossible in the fullest sense. In the fullest sense. But to get closer, we can. And we must. That's the idea of having an neshama that motivates and that carries the guf along with it. We are mortal. We are subject to death because we've allowed the body to carry us. And if the body carries us, bodies die. If we allowed the neshama to carry us and the body, we would go back to immortality because neshamas don't die. And the neshama would be the driver of our lives, of everything, the motivator, the direction. So the more we get a grip on it, the longer we live. You know, your doctor will tell you the same thing. The more you're able to get objective about the decisions you make around your body, the healthier you'll be, the longer you'll be able to live. We see this on a quantitative and qualitatively different level. Because we say that when the person strengthens the neshama and the neshama drives, then we start to taste a world of immortality that while we don't know how long Hashem will allot to us here on this earth, but we do know that the eternity will be that much stronger. I want to give you an example of this that some of you have heard from me before. Some recently, some in the distant. In a more distant past, but I will repeat it. It's a surprising teaching, but it's a very important teaching. It's a teaching of Rabbeinu Yaina on the notion that we find that Chassidim HaRishonim, that the pious people used to take a certain amount of time before they davened. It says they would wait an hour before they started to daven. Hayushayin Shah Achas Umispalalim. What did they do in that hour? What do they prepare themselves? How do they prepare themselves for davening in an hour? And Rabbeinu Yonah explains that this was not simply that they were trying to clear their minds of all of its clutter so that when they davened, they would be able to focus on what they were saying, which in itself would be a valuable exercise. But he says that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah doesn't say so they can focus on their tefilos, k'di sheyichavnu libam litefilasam, but it says k'di sheyichavnu libam Lamokom or Lavim Shabashamayim, to focus their hearts on Hashem. So it's something else. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes, and this is, by the way, brought in the Shulchan Aruch, this is not just a far out commentary. He writes in the name of the Ramban. You could look at it, it's source tests on your sheet in the middle of the second side, toward the end of the third line, Elevade Kachu HaPerush. This is certainly what this means. You want them to be able to focus, that their hearts can be complete in the service of Hashem. And they will remove from their hearts the pleasures of this world and its enjoyments. Because when you purify your hearts from the vanities of this world, and instead, their thoughts are on higher things. Tiet filosam ritzio mekubeles lifnei hamakom. Then their prayer is going to be most acceptable to Hashem. I said this Rabbeinu Yonah over recently, and I illustrated it with a little story. And the story was like this. Somebody came to me several months ago, and they said, "You'll never believe what happened to me yesterday." So what happened to you yesterday? He says, "Yesterday I went out of town for a wedding. I got to the airport, and I saw that Rav Aaron Feldman, the Rosh Yeshiva, was on my flight. Now, then I got on the airplane, and I found out that it was a full flight, and that Rav Aaron Feldman was sitting here, and I was sitting here. So the only problem was, what did I bring for the flight? A novel. Here I was. I was sitting next to Rosh Yeshiva Rav Aaron Feldman. Oh, I just wanted to talk to him and get whatever I could. Problem was, I was just like completely unprepared. Okay, so the novel I could hide in the seat pocket, you know, in front of me. But, you know, if I would have known, I would have spent the night before, you know, maybe going over the Parsha and starting to think about things that he would talk about. Instead, what we're going to do, so he's going to ask me what I do, and I was going to tell him about the Chveis, about my business, about this, that, and the other. I don't want to talk to him about my business. I wanted to be able to talk to him about what he could talk to me about. And the problem was that I just, you know, I came from work, I ran to the airport, I had this novel, and suddenly I find myself next to him. We have the same thing when we daven. Right? We feel like, okay, we finished this errand, we finished that thing, we're going to quickly grab a sitter. And we daven. And we're still in the world of errands and menus and carpools and everything else. And suddenly, we find ourselves standing in the presence of Hashem. Now, Hashem is concerned for every little detail of our lives. And believe me, just like Rav Aaron Feldman was very gracious to the person next to him and was very happy to talk to him about whatever he wanted to talk to him. You know, Rav Huttner used to read the sports pages so he would be able to have some sprach, some common language with the American students in his yeshiva. You know, but that's not what they wanted to talk to him about. And that's not really what he wanted to hear from them about. And in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, the good news is there's no carpool, right? And in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, you know, they're just a different realm of concerns, a different realm of things of significance. So we're going to go, and we're going to come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu without disengaging to some degree. So during that hour, they would not just clear their mind of clutter, they would clear their world of concerns to a certain degree. And they would allow the higher considerations, the higher values of chesed, of emes, of kiddush Hashem ba'olam, to become the things that they were thinking about, some level of disengagement. And then they could feel a little bit more that they had what to speak to Hashem about. That was what they did in that hour. And that's why they needed an hour after davening too. Because, you know, when you open up the sitter and you concentrate, when you finish the script, you can close it and go back to life. But when you enter a different realm, you know, you need to go to a decompression chamber before you come back in. And that was what they did. In a sense, it was a little bit of nazirus. It was a little bit of detachment, allowing themselves to move outside of themselves. But at the same time, when you daven, what do? Right? As we do always, the survey always works. There are two brachas that everybody tries their best to focus on in the Shemoneh Esrei. And what are they? They're right in the middle. Right? They get the most kavana, the most extra words get thrown into those two brachas of any other. Refa'enu and Borech Aleinu. Well, Shmach Aleinu also, if you forgot by Refa'enu. And also, right? Or you want to add something else. But Refa'enu, right? People daven for health, and they daven for parnasa. Right? Now, those are the mundane things, right? That's carpal, Mishan. No, we daven for all those things. We daven for das, we daven for tshuva, we daven for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring the Jewish people together, we daven for Yerushalayim, we daven for all of those things. But it seems, if you would take a survey and you would ask people, okay, how do you score yourself on how often you zone in for this bracha and for that bracha, Rafa'enu and Baruch Aleinu would almost undoubtedly win the prize. Am I right?
Right.
Am I right? I think I'm right. Yeah, okay. Shmakoleinu again, but in Shmakoleinu, what are you going to say? You say Befeinu Barcholeinu. You know, so it'll be the same thing. Right? But it's about our material needs. It's about our material needs. So are we really transcending it to talk about Hashem? But we are supposed to ask for our material needs. The Hasidim HaRishonim didn't ask for their material needs. They did. For sure. But you know where they asked it from? They asked it from a perch. Like they were standing on their own shoulder or looking down at themselves from above. Like the Nazir who brought himself into the Ohel Moed. Like the person who says, you know, this isn't my whole being. You know, I it's not me. But you know, I'm going to need it. I'm going to need it. You know, a person works for a company. And they say, you know, you need to have a company car. You're driving around. And this fellow, oh, he loves his car. Right? Every Sunday, right, he spends his time shining and polishing the car. And the car gets 20,000 miles on it. And he comes into the office and he tells the boss, you know, I need a new car. It already has 20,000 miles on it. It's already a year old. Mm. Right? The boss says, I don't know. Then there's this other fellow who couldn't care less about the car. Right? You know, he has to be reminded, you know, to put gas in it, right? He has to be reminded to, you know, to wash it, to make sure it's clean, you know, once in a while. And he's there and he's working with him, but he's, you know, this is something he needs, but it's not like his whole life. His life isn't his car. And then, you know, somebody tells him, you know, I think you probably need to get another car. And he goes into the bus, and in the midst of all the other significant things he's talking about for the company, he says, and by the way, I don't know, the guys next to me think that I need to somehow replace the car. One second, the guy says to him, you know, go to the thing and you'll get yourself another car. Because he's not into it. He's above it. His line of communication with the office, with the CEO isn't about his car and, by the way, let me talk to you about how business is going. It's about how business is going and, by the way, let me speak to you about the car. It's not really me. And that's where these Hasidim HaRishonim went in tefillah. That's what it means when a person's able to become a Kaddish, to somehow be above, but yet a part of. Enjoy the world, but in a certain sense, from a place where you're more firmly rooted in a higher value. That's the capacity that Hashem gave us when He gave us the Neshama. And I just want to conclude with one last piece to bring this back to Har Sinai. In a sense, of course, what we've been talking about here is really what drives everything. All the sections which we have built till now about the uniqueness of man. Yeah, as we started with this idea of the Kohen, that what we're trying to do is allow the neshama to take over the guf. That it shouldn't be that the body drives us, but the soul does, and that's where we get eternity. That's the Kohen, that's the Mamleches Kohanim. That's why for him to see the failure of that exercise is jarring and separate from the way it's supposed to be. And because we're born into a physical world and we just grow in das, spirituality, we have to develop and we have to cultivate. So being a human being is the ability to work and to build and to grow it. And the idea to be able to be a bocher, to be free, not to be just a prisoner of habit. Right? That's a power that the neshama gives us to transcend just our habitual physical things and to be above it. That freedom and the ability to create real attachment, and which we will speak about now here in this comment of the Baal HaTanya. The Baal HaTanya was speaking here and offers an explanation of the most one of the most well-known stories in the Gemara about the person who came to Hillel, first to Shammai, and was thrown out, and then to Hillel, and he wanted to learn the Torah while he was standing on one foot. And Hillel told him, basically, v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha, you should love your fellow man as yourself. Everything else is commentary. And everybody knows the problem. What does that mean, everything else is commentary? I mean, we have two tablets, two portions of Torah. Torah beinodam l'mokom, Torah beinodam l'chaveiro. V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha maybe encompasses, one might say, beinodam l'chaveiro. How does it encompass, how does it include our religious obligations, beinodam l'mokom? So there are different approaches to this question. Listen to what a Baal HaTanya has to say. This is sort of in mid thing, the way he goes perek to perek. Now his language is going to be a little strong, okay? Prepared. He says, the person in the process we described here, his body will be very much secondary in his eyes. I'm even saying it gentler than he says it. His true joy will be found in the joy of the soul. Harezu derech yeshara v'kala lovoi lidei kiyum mitzvahs v'haftal reyacha kamecha v'chol nefesh Yisrael migadol v'adkata. This is the way. When a person's enjoyment and satisfaction in this world is a spiritual enjoyment, that's how you get to v'haftal reyacha kamecha. That's how you get to loving your fellow man as yourself. When his body he views as being secondary, but his soul, wow. All the souls are together. It all comes from one place. That's why we're considered brothers. Our source of our souls is all in the one God. It's just that the bodies are separate. Our neshamas are not separate. Our neshamas are from one place. And when we would view, you know, just like ruchnius, you know, is spirituality, right? Ruachnius comes from like ruach, wind and air. Can you say which part of the air this is and which part of the air this is? You can't. But when you talk about this table stops right here and that table starts over there. Physical things are broken into pieces. They're separated. They have boundaries. Spiritual things, the things in the air has no boundaries. It has no boundaries. In Ruchnius, when we focus on our neshamas, when we identify ourselves with our neshamas, we are one. When we identify ourselves with our bodies, well, when my stomach is growling, yours isn't. And when yours is growling, mine isn't. When you want ice cream, it doesn't approach to me the same as when I want it. Physically, we're separate. Physically, we're different. But the more we root ourselves and define ourselves by what Hashem gave us, distinct from animals, not 0.6 of our DNA, but 100% of our neshama that they have 0% of. When we identify ourselves by that, then we're not separate. And there we have the v'haftal reyacha kamocha. And so says the Baal HaTanya. That's Torah. That's all of Torah. All of Torah is for the person to orient themselves and to define themselves by higher values. By values and sensitivities and types of appreciation that only a neshama can have. That's what the Torah is about. While we're here, Hashem says, I want you to enjoy other things too. But what you define yourself by, what moves you and drives you, is the neshama, which is higher. And there you become one. Adam HaRishon, when he was in Gan Eden, he was one. Now, he wasn't a fellow who on his driver's license it said Adam. Right? Adam was not the name of one person who did an Aveira and now we all have to suffer for it because he's our grandfather. Adam was humankind. And in Gan Eden, humankind was one person. V'hafta l'reacha kamocha. He was defined by his neshama. He was one person. When he ate from the tree of knowledge, the next stories which we have is we have Cain and Hevel, two people, two brothers who are killing each other over their desires. It breaks up. And Chazal tell us, and we know, that when we stood at Har Sinai, we were back in Gan Eden. Right? At Har Sinai, the corruption of the sin disappeared. At Har Sinai, we became immortal. Right? That's why, I always tell you, that's why Jewish hospitals, 9 times out of 10, are called Sinai, Mount Sinai, because that's where the Jewish people, they return to physical perfection, to healing, to immortality. And everybody knows, what does it say, what happened before Har Sinai? Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ha'har Kishechad B'Lev Echad. We camp there, and it uses the singular form, like one man with one heart. Gan Eden. Now, it wasn't one person where you have to take my word for it that he was humankind. There were 600,000 adult males between 20 and 60. There were a couple of million people there. And it describes them as one man. Because they were in Gan Eden again. Because what had they done? They had now made their neshamas at the climax of the Sfiras HaEmer. They had made themselves into people. Into what a person could be. And what a person can be is where the neshama shines bright and strong. And when the neshama shines bright and strong, the guf is, it's there, but it's not me. me is my soul, my higher values, my higher appreciations. And when that's me, we're all one. We're back in Gan Eden, and we're all one. This is, in the words of Hillel, and in the words of the Baal HaTanya, this is Kol HaTorah Kula. This is what it's all about. We live in a world, in a time, where there's so many material things which drive us. So many material things would present themselves to us. It's just unbelievable. It's overwhelming. It like doubles and triples itself, it seems like, every few years, where it can be. And our charge, our task as people, and especially in the Golos, where we have no physical world to build around us, we have only the spiritual world to build in Golos. When we get to Eretz Yisrael, we have the physical world to build as well. But here, our tachlis is to be very much with our eyes on the prize. And while Hashem has granted us these gifts of prosperity that He would want us to enjoy without question, but He wouldn't want them to distract us from that which really, really counts, from being able to see that which is the central values of life. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the strength and the vision to rise above ourselves in this realm and to achieve some level of objectivity, to make decisions that are right for ourselves and right for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah according to the spirit that's within us and that's within His Torah. We should be matzliach, we should be successful.